Okay, legends and lessons. Tonight's date, Hebrew date, is... What's Hebrew date? The 13th?
I think the Yudalid.
Is it Yudalid tonight? Okay. So... Then, yeah, I think tonight is Yudalid. Tonight would be Yudalid. And therefore, we are learning about this legend on his yahrzeit. Tonight is the 14th of Sivan, and that is Rav Chaim of Volozhin's yahrzeit. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, a very important person, not only in terms of what he did, but what he started. We'll get to it later on. We've talked about him before, probably, if I had to guess... trying to think. When would we have talked about him? Maybe did we talk about the Netziv? I think we talked about the Netziv. We probably would have mentioned Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Either way, he was born in 1749, and legend has it that his parents were divorced, but hold on. What does this mean? Yeah, they got remarried. I think the problem might have been financial, that they didn't have enough money, and then they were supported, and therefore they got remarried. So that's the Rav Chaim's parents. They had five children, and Rav Chaim was one of them. Early on, he was a student by a person named Rav Rifrol of Hamburg. I don't know much about him, but you can tell that it's Ashkenazi. And you can tell by the year 1749 that it was probably traditional. By the end of Rav Chaim's life, so then there was the prospect of Hasidus. We'll see soon why that's so important to, or why that's so instrumental in Rav Chaim's life. At 15, he became a student of the Shagas Aryeh, a famous commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Aryeh Leib Ginsburg, who was at the time the Rav of Volozhin itself. So the Shagas Aryeh was the Rav of Volozhin. You might have heard the name of the Shagas Aryeh. Well, maybe one day we'll talk about him more. And in 1769, he meets the man that's going to change his life. Who knows Rav Chaim Volozhin's Rebbe? You don't know who is Rav Chaim Volozhin's Rebbe. He's considered the Talmud Muvak of a very important person. He meets him when he's 20 years old, none other than the Vilna Gaon. Rabbi Eliel Kramer. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra, is known to have been somewhat of a hermit, meaning he would be by himself. I don't know if we've talked about the Gra before. Did we talk about the Vilna Gaon? Yeah, we did. His yahrzeit's on Sukkot, so it would have been a Tishrei shir. And the Vilna Gaon was known for being like somewhat to himself. He obviously had what to do with the community and wrote a lot, but he wasn't the type of person that had very consistent or daily talmidim like other rabbanim had. Instead, the relationship between the Vilna Gaon and the Reb Chaim, which essentially became, you know, who essentially became the Vilna Gaon's main pupil, wasn't a day to day thing. They lived in different places. Obviously, the Vilna Gaon lived in Vilna, and Reb Chaim lived in Volozhin. But nonetheless, he would come to visit Reb Chaim three times a year. And throughout the rest of the year, Reb Chaim would sort of come up with all these different questions. And whenever he would come to the Gra, I don't know, take a long weekend or something and come visit the Vilna Gaon, they would go through all the questions together. At the age of 25, not really sure why or how, but at the age of 25, Reb Chaim became the Rav of Volozhin, the city of Volozhin, which had just had the honor of having a Rav like the Shagas Aryeh, though it then goes and hires a 25-year-old named Reb Chaim, maybe Rabinovich. We don't really know, I don't think for sure if that was his last name, but nonetheless... the Gra then became someone who would consult Reb Chaim, someone who would consult Reb Chaim also. Reb Chaim was a Rav of a city, so he also gained his own type of prominence. Um, basically Reb Chaim had answered some questions for the Gra, and the Gra was therefore, you know, gave sort of reciprocated his respect. Reb Chaim obviously was the Talmud of the Gra, but after he saw Reb Chaim's sort of scholarship, he then recognized that he was someone he could ask questions to. Also, it wasn't just a one way street. So now we have a wonderful sort of relationship brewing, although the Gra is not going to live for much longer, but nonetheless, he was still a formidable sort of Talmud Mufak, but also colleague in this way. The Gra started a trend, which I guess, at least for his generation, wasn't really, well, I don't know if that's true or not, but the Gra is known for very incisive Talmudic analysis, and that's not necessarily something that all Rabbanim back then did. There were obviously some, but in that time period, you're thinking of sort of the tail end of the 17th century into the 18th century, there was a lot of psak halacha, right? You think of the Shagas Aryeh was all about halacha. You think about all the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch. The Chasam Sofer was all about tshuvas, right? They're very halachic based. And now the Gra comes along and says, we're going to revisit the incisive analysis of Gemara. And this is really what had, you know, this is really something that started a trend that continued after him until today, right? The fact that our Gemara, our yeshivas nowadays are so focused on Gemara, all stems back to the Gra based on the Reb Chaim's tradition from the Gra, as we'll see soon. So, hold on. Oh, interesting. I don't know who said this line, but I must have seen it somewhere. The Maggid of Mezerich was to the Baal Shem Tov what Reb Chaim was to the Gra. Now, that is a loaded phrase on a number of levels. And it doesn't just mean that he was the main student. But what it means is that he was the one that's going to carry and thereby proliferate the legacy of the Gra. Meaning, if you think of the Baal Shem Tov, if you remember our Baal Shem Tov class, whose Yartzeit was on Shavuos, we talked about him last year for Sivan. So, the Baal Shem Tov was, in many ways, an esoteric character whose legend only grew through his Talmidim. The Baal Shem Tov didn't really go around much. He was instead, in many ways, just based in Mezhebezh. He wasn't very healthy. Neither was the Maggid, but I might be messing up with the Maggid. It wasn't very healthy, but either way, the Baal Shem Tov didn't really travel much after he got in his position there. He wasn't really a Rav, he wasn't traditionally trained, etc. But he gives Chassidus, this concept of Chassidus, over to the Maggid of Mezrich, and the Maggid of Mezrich makes it into a movement. Right, he sends all his Talmidim to different places. He sends to Lubavitch, to Karlin. Right, these are all the mainstays of Chassidus you probably have heard of before. The same thing happens with the Gra when he gives it over to Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim starts not in the same way in terms of Chassidus and starting a whole new thing, but in terms of a methodology of learning. Whereas other, you know, poskim of the day would probably focus more on Psak Halacha, on the Shulchan Aruch, on Tshuvas, Shalos Tshuvas, the method of the Gra and Reb Chaim was to focus more on Gemara. There are probably different reasons for this. But some historians like to point out that maybe this was based on a response to Chassidus. Because we said before, the Reb Chaim was born in 1749, which is just about the time the Baal Shem Tov came on the scene. And in the 1750s, the 1760s, the Maggid of Mezrich starts to learn from the Baal Shem and starts to give over his own Torahs. And by the time we're talking where the Reb Chaim had already become, in his 40s, a mainstay of rabbinic scholarship, especially in Volozhin, being the Rav of Volozhin, so we're talking about a new movement of Talmudic scholarship, meaning of digging down deep. So when we're talking, let's say the 40, so we're talking 1789. By 1789, Chassidus was already very popular. It was already threatening, right? We know famously that the Gra was someone who had posted publicly, even though he didn't usually do anything activist in his life. For Hasidus, the Gra spoke out against it. We talked about before, maybe this was because of Kabbalah, maybe it's because of Shabtai Tzvi, a whole bunch of different things that it could have been based on. But either way, in some historians point out that in response to Hasidus, which at least at the time had focused more on ecstasy and davening and experiential Judaism and not as much on scholarship, in response to that, the Gra and thereby Reb Chaim focus more on Gemara. And they said, even though it's always been the focus of traditional Judaism to learn from the Gemara, to learn from our Mesorah, in this situation, we're going to double down, we're going to dig even deeper. And they start a movement of Talmudic scholarship, which has continued until today. There was one other movement that starts around this time, which historians say might have also been a response to Hasidus. Anyone know what would have been the other movement that came up about around this time? Anybody? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Musar movement, right? It was a bit different from Hasidus, but also somewhat, you know, in terms of character development, in terms of becoming a better person, not necessarily in terms of Gemara learning or in terms of ecstasy like Hasidus, but nonetheless, a very formidable movement, which also was, according to some, a response to Hasidus or alternatively a response to the Enlightenment, the Haskalah. Okay, so the Misnagdim, if you will, right, those who were opposed, who opposed Hasidus, sort of doubled down on making Gemara more accessible. So this is one of the things that was, in some ways, the impetus for Hasidus. At least according to some, the impetus for Hasidus was for the people that lived on the countryside. At least originally in Hasidic towns, there were little shtetls, there were little places of poor people who didn't really have the same type of academic background. They couldn't read as well, they didn't have svarim, right? A lot of different things that went into the promotion of Hasidus, which was sort of an alternative derech for those who maybe didn't have the same level of expertise or background to learn. In response to that, so Reb Chaim and the Gra don't say, okay, fine, people can't learn, let's not learn. But instead, they said, let's figure out a way that the people who don't have the access like everybody else, they can also learn. Meaning instead of just, you know, giving it all up, let's find a way that they can actually learn what we want them to learn, as opposed to veering off and not learning anymore. So then they asked Reb Chaim to replace another prominent rabbi, another prominent student of the Gra, in a place called Vilkomir, and he accepted it, but he didn't take any money, and he went back to Voloshin afterwards. It just didn't work. Apparently, Reb Chaim had a linen factory, right? He sold the cloth. But then something very important happens in Reb Chaim's life in 1798. And that is the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, passes away. On Simchas Torah, if I'm not mistaken, maybe Chol Moed, the Gra passes away, and thereby the movement that Reb Chaim had inherited from the Gra, this focus, this incisive study of Talmud, of Gemara, was itself at risk. And in response to that, void of not having the Vilna Gaon in the world anymore, Reb Chaim started a yeshiva. And this becomes known as the famous Voloshiner Yeshiva, the Yeshiva of Voloshin. This is perhaps the most important yeshiva of, arguably the most important yeshiva in terms of the groundwork that it set, the foundation that it set for all time. Perhaps one of the most important yeshivas of human history, of the Jewish history. Because what it did basically was it created a curriculum for intense Talmudic study. This is the basis of almost every yeshiva you've heard of today. You've heard of all the gap year programs, you've heard of YU, you've heard of Landers, you've heard all these yeshivas are tailored after the same methodology, that we're going to spend 3-4 hours learning Gemara intensely. We're not going to be focusing on the Shulchan Aruch and Nosei Kelim, unless for those who are going to Smicha, but we're actually going to analyze and depict what exactly it is the Gemara wants us to hear from this sugya, how's the Gemara supposed to be interpreted from that sugya. And therefore, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner starts this yeshiva and starts really a movement. So, when he's 53 years old, right, this is basically at the beginning of the yeshiva's, at the yeshiva's infancy, he publishes a letter to all communities across Poland and Lithuania, addressing the need that the need for a serious yeshiva. And originally, the yeshiva had only 12 students. But the difference about this yeshiva was they weren't just taking any students and teaching them how to learn Gemara. This was going to be a yeshiva for the next generation's gedolim. And it was. They would test them. They would have very high expectations of them. And therefore, these 12 students were very important students, because what was going to happen, similar to the Magen Mezrich, at least after they were trained, the Reb Chaim was going to then send them away to start their own yeshiva, to start their own, you know, place of expertise, of Talmudic scholarship. They would go from all over, they would come from all over. They had to pass a test in Gemara to be accepted. Reb Chaim cared immensely about the Talmidim. Apparently, he said that he used to go through the snow to make a walkway for them to come to yeshiva. He gave them a stipend, right, sort of similar to the first, kollel, so that they didn't have to go into other people's homes or ask for money or whatever. He sent out fundraising letters to other rabbis, other communities. When his own personal linen business wasn't enough to support the yeshiva, so he would ask other people for money to support the yeshiva. After a while, it became a well-known yeshiva because of all the prominent rabbanim that came out of it. The legend is that Reb Chaim's wife even sold her own jewelry to contribute to the yeshiva. Students would learn in mishmaros. Basically, they took it upon themselves to be the ultimate learning center of the world. At the time, there wasn't a yeshiva like it. So they would have people that learned at different places. You might be familiar with the concept of mishmar, right? You have it at the Farber, you have it at different yeshivas. The concept of mishmar is the concept of having somebody in the world learning at all times. Now, nowadays we think that's a kind of a silly concept, just because, you know, there's so many different time zones in the world that obviously people are learning at the same time. But the concept is the right concept. It is a admirable concept. That in the Volozhiner yeshiva, there were people learning literally around the clock. They would split up the day and make sure that this would really be the center for Torah learning. As opposed to the Gra, however, the Reb Chaim focused on the teacher. Meaning he would have, right, the Gra was a loner. As I said before, he taught himself. The Reb Chaim, because he's starting the yeshiva, says in order for this to become a movement, this is similar to how we talked about by Sarah Schneer, in order for it to become a movement, you have to teach teachers. And the structure that he developed was so that people could know how to teach also, and therefore, all of these other Rabbanim would come out of the Volozhiner yeshiva, and they would go out to other places and teach there. At the end of his life, he writes a book called Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim is a mix of Musar, philosophy, a lot of these interesting concepts from the Gemaras themselves. It talks about the world and Hashem and everything that's in the world, and the importance of Talmud Torah, obviously. I think maybe it's the fourth Shaar. I don't remember exactly, but there's a section in there all about Talmud Torah, and we used to learn it every day before Shir in yeshiva. Because he wrote as part of the Misnagdim, so each person either praised what he was doing or was against what he was doing. But unlike others, he did not really... Hold on. Okay, interesting. I don't know where I got this from. But Reb Chaim also includes Kabbalah. Even though he's not Hasidish, and even though he is in some ways opposed to Hasidus because he's the student of the Gra, there was nonetheless a mix in his books with Kabbalah also. A general distinction that people say between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim, Hashem for Hasidim is in everything, right? That's the concept of Tzimtzum. Right, there's an imminence of Hashem everywhere. Whereas for the Misnagdim, Hashem is aware and in control, but Hashem is from a distance, right? That's sort of our more conventional way of understanding Hashem's role in the world. It's not that Hashem is mamish inside of anything, or that His holiness is inside or imbued with anything, but Hashem is in active control of everything. And that's sort of the difference of Chassidus versus Misnagdim. Hold on. Okay, there are different ways of understanding that. But either way, Reb Chaim Volozhiner passes away in 1821, in the 23 years after the Gra. The Volozhiner Yeshiva continues on until the end of the 19th century, basically, I believe it's 1899, so the Netziv that closed it? No. It was the Brisker Rav that closed it. One of them closed it because of the Russian government was forcing them to learn secular studies, and it was having an effect on them, so they did not want to do it, and they closed it down. But the Volozhiner Yeshiva produced many, many important Rabbanim throughout the throughout its 100 years, basically, almost 100 years. I think he started it literally in 1501, but it was obviously a legacy that not only affected its yeshiva, but also others. So if you, let's see, other people that came from Volozhiner Yeshiva, Rev Isser Zalman Meltzer, Rev Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Rev Moshe Epstein, Rev Zelig Reuven Bengus, Chaim Bialik, the author, I was also in there. You actually, there are some poems that he wrote about Volozhiner Yeshiva. Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzynski, Rav Yaakov Yosef, Rav Arya Levine, Rav Shimon Shkup, Rav Elchanan Wasserman. So a lot of important people. Rav Chaim Brisker is the one that closed it down. So I think, is that what I said? Rav Chaim Brisker closed it down after there was a compulsion from the Russian government to learn certain specific things. I believe the Netziv was gone by then. Yeah, the Netziv passed away in 1893, so he wasn't there. But yeah, a lot of important figures come out of the Volozhiner Yeshiva, and it all comes from Reb Chaim, who was himself a legacy, a continuation of the Gra. So while it's true the Gra was one of a kind, Reb Chaim took that legacy of focusing on Talmud, focus on Gemara learning, and brought it into the mainstream by creating it in a structured curriculum so that people could access it in a way which was open to the masses, whether it's because in Volozhiner Yeshiva or because those Rabbanim went out into the other communities and taught there. All right, we're going to stop it there. I know short, but I've got things to do. I'm glad people came on, so I appreciate that. And Meretz Hashem, we'll continue with Mishlei next week. In a couple weeks from now, or 3 weeks from now, we'll do another Legends and Lessons for the month of Tammuz. Everyone should be well. And Meretz Hashem, I will see you next time. Thank you. All the best. Thank you, guys. Sorry for the short one, but so it goes sometimes.